We know that according to Jewish tradition, and certainly according to the Rambam, there are two sources of truth. One source we commemorate in Parashat Yitro and on Shavuot through the giving of the Torah, through the revelation of God's divine knowledge to the Jewish people. The other source is human reason, which helps us as well to understand the world. The question becomes, to what degree do we go in order to obtain knowledge, and what sources are considered to be legitimate in that effort? That is the subject matter of today's shiur. The question we're going to be asking today is one that concerns the ability to learn from heretics. And to quote in their name, the source for this is the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Bet, which says the following. The discussion regards the issue of eating what's called pat akum, non-Jewish bread. For those who do not know, there are various types of foods that the rabbis forbid to be eaten if they were cooked by non-Jews, baked by non-Jews, wine that was made by non-Jews. And part of the reason that is given as to why they are forbidden is because of chatnut, because of the fear, believe it or not, that it will lead you to marry non-Jews. Now, we're not talking about the things being kosher. Of course, it has to be kosher. We're talking about even if it is kosher and a non-Jew made it, there's a fear that you're going to interact with them socially. You'll come to know them better. And then a guy will say, hey, here's my daughter, by the way. Oh, nice to meet you. The next thing you know, we have an intermarriage taking place. The rabbis feared this very greatly, so they tried to create distance between Jews and non-Jews to a degree that would not allow them to socialize so freely together without at least some boundaries. So one of the things they did was they said that you're not allowed to eat the bread that is baked by non-Jews. In other words, a Jew has to have a part in the baking process. Otherwise, you can't eat that bread. And since bread is a staple of a meal, especially in their time, kind of everything revolved around the bread, well, if we can't break bread together, that's going to create a huge problem with us regularly being able to interact with them. And that's what the rabbis, again, wanted to do. However, it was seen in this decree that this was somewhat of a difficult decree, because since people need bread all the time in order to live, so they found this to be something that the congregation, it says, Hatzibur eino yachol lamod bo. The congregation apparently could not follow this rabbinic decree. It's very strange. Usually the rabbis make a decree. Well, what do you mean you can't follow it? We made it. You got to follow it. But there is something within the legal system itself in Jewish law which says that if most of the congregation cannot follow this, most of the community cannot follow it, it's just too difficult, that then the decree falls. Now, in this case, there was such a problem that people saw, like, this is too difficult, just not to have bread made by non-Jews, it's too difficult. So the next level of this law became that you can have bread that's baked by non-Jews if it's in a commercial setting, if you get it from a baker, as opposed to getting it from the non-Jewish house. You go over to his house, he has some bread for you, let's presume it's kosher for now, says, hey, you want to sit down and eat together? Oh, then we're going to have this problem of social interaction. But if we have, however, the notion that this could only be done in a commercial setting, like you went to the bakery to get some bread, let's say it was made by non-Jews, it was supervised by Jews, but it was made by non-Jews. Okay? But you're buying it there. The guy didn't have time to introduce you to his family. What are you talking about? He's baking here. He's doing a business. He's selling stuff. So the rabbis then decided, okay, some held in that setting, if it's in a commercial setting like that, so there's less of a fear it's going to lead to this social interaction that we're worried about. And in that case, you could buy the bread. Okay? But what everyone agreed upon is that you could not buy the bread if it was just on an individual basis. From another non-Jew, let's go and have the bread together. Now, you can't do that. Now, they even allowed that, however, in certain unique situations. Let's say, again, you knew the bread was kosher, but you didn't have any bread for Shabbos. And this is the only bread I could get. So there they even said, okay, fine. In that situation, you could even use baked bread by a non-Jew, even if it was in a private scenario that you had to get the bread. Or if you didn't have any bread,
You needed bread to eat.
Then they said you could do it in that situation. They also allowed you to eat certain type of bread, maybe even privately. If you were not in the city, you were in a place where there was no bread, again, you were in the forest, and you found a guy who was baking bread, again, you could ascertain it was kosher. You told him, make it kosher for me. But generally speaking, all right, to get baked bread from a non-Jew, you get the idea, was something that was not allowed, unless it was, again, we said using pot palter, we call it, in a more commercial type setting, in order to maintain the distance between Jews and non-Jews. Now, that's all an introduction to this Gemara, which seems to have nothing to do with learning from heretics. What does that have to do with anything? So here's the Gemara. The Gemara says, Avodah Zarah daf lamed hamud bet, it says, Ivo habe minaket va'achil pot abe mitzre. It says, Avu was biting and eating bread of a non-Jew outside of the city at the borders of the field. And apparently it was inappropriate. Apparently he really wasn't in the fields. He was more in the city. Okay, and yet he was eating the bread, not of a commercial-made non-Jewish bread, because that was said some permitted. But apparently he was eating a bread he had gotten from an individual non-Jew. So because of this, Amar lehu Rava, the Yitema Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. Rava, and some say Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, said to the students of the yeshiva, Lo tishta'u b'hadei de'aivu. Do not speak with aivu. In other words, it seems like they put him in a form of excommunication. De'ka'achil lachma d'aramai. Because he's eating Aramean, that is to say, he's eating non-Jewish bread against what we established you must do. Alright? Now, while I say it's a form of excommunication in Jewish law, you know, if a person does something terrible enough, so the rabbis have a right to excommunicate him. What's it mean to excommunicate him? They can say, don't speak with him. Don't do business with him. Don't invite him over. Count him for a minion. He is out of the community. He's a Jew, but we exclude him from our community because of the terrible thing that he did. All right. Now here it seems they were just giving kind of one level of that. They were just saying, you know, so-and-so was eating this bread. We announced that we had a decree you're not supposed to. Even though we said it wasn't such a decree that took, you know, the hardest stand because people said they couldn't do it, so that's why they couldn't whip him. There were cases where you whip a person if he violates such a rabbinic law. But, you know, this didn't really catch on, so we can't give lashes, the commentators say. But he should not have been eating that bread like that from an individual. I'm sorry. He should have not been just disgracing and degrading the words of the rabbis like that. So you know what? Did not speak to this individual. Now that's one reading. Others had a different reading of this Gemara, wherein it said, other Rishonim had the reading that instead of it saying that you should not speak to him, the Rush and the Ron and others had a reading that said, do not quote of him when you are in the study hall, in the Beis Medrash. In other words, this individual, Ivo, so if you were in the study hall, you might say, you know, how do we understand this? Oh, I once heard Ivo give a very beautiful explanation to this. Well, from now on, you just say, I heard a very beautiful explanation to this. You don't say that Ivo said it. Because since he was mezalzel, we say, since the way he treated the rabbis, when they said something, they said, you know, we have this law about eating bread now you got to keep. And he said, didn't catch on, forget it. And he just violated it. So measure for measure, they say, mida keneged mida. Okay, fine. So we're going to be mezalzel in the things that you say. We're just going to say it not in your name anymore. We're not going to say it in your name. That really hurts a Jew. You know, it's one thing you say, we're not going to talk to you. It's another thing, we're not going to say this beautiful intellectual statement that you made in your name. How do you like that? Oh, no, anything, not that. I'd rather be whipped. Anything, not that. You're not going to use my name. You're not going to give me credit. So, again, this is what the law says here. Let me just point out a few more things, and we will get to this discussion in a moment. Note, very fascinating, usually we have a Gemara that says that, and we learn this in Masechet Megillah, and because Esther did it in the name of Mordechai, it says in the Megillah, it says, Kol haomer davar b'shem omro mevi geula liolam. Whoever says something in the name of the person who said it brings redemption to the world. In other words, you just don't say something and plagiarize it. And you just don't say, and I once heard an explanation, but you say the person who said it. You give credit where credit is due. I once heard from a Soloveitchik, he gave the following explanation. You say the person who said it. And this brings redemption to the world. As I understand that there wasn't anybody just redemption to the world. You know, we believe from Har Sinai, it's been many, many centuries. We always believe to try to kind of reconnect to our past. If you quote who said something in the name of someone who said it, in a sense, you're reestablishing your connections to your past, to your heritage, to your tradition. And the more we identify with our past and can connect, that can bring, again, redemption to the world. Perhaps that's the idea. So here, it's amazing, we're being told, even though usually we have this Gemara that says, say something in the name of the person brings redemption to the world. No, this guy should not have been doing this. Do not say his name. Overlook that halacha. If a person is wicked, apparently, he shouldn't have been doing this. How wicked was he? He was eating kosher bread, but the rabbi said you shouldn't have got it from an individual. That's a violation of the decree we made, so we're not going to quote your name anymore. Because of that, we don't quote your name, even though it says you usually bring redemption, not in this case. Don't quote his name. Moreover, just one more thing. We also have a general principle that the Rambam says it, although we have other indications of this in the Gemara. The Gemara says, in Yom Alecha Adam, if a person will say to you, Torah ba'amim, Torah ba'goyim, that the non-Jews have Torah. Don't believe it. Really, they have Torah. They don't have the Torah. The Torah is given to the Jewish people. Chochma ba'goyim, but if someone says to you, there's wisdom there among the nations, Tamim, then you should believe. Yeah, there of course is wisdom among the nations. Not Torah, but there is wisdom. So we have respect for the idea of worldly wisdom. And the Rambam puts this into a statement by saying, he says, Kabelata emet mimisha amru. The Rambam, before he quotes various philosophers, astronomers, and others, says this statement, he says, accept the truth from whomever it comes. If it's true, it's true. Which is very dear to us. So we are not violating this here, by the way. Because we are saying, we're not saying if Ivo tells you something, you know, can't be true, because you see how he violates things. He doesn't eat bread properly according to the sages. We're not saying don't accept it if it's true. If it's true, it's true. Just don't say his name. But truth is truth. That's how much we love the truth. But here you see this notion that by a wicked person, we are told you can still learn from him, but do not say it in his name. Do not say it in his name. Now, what we are discussing now, again, the idea of accepting the truth from whomever it comes, you can see this in so many ways. For example, the Rambam. The Rambam, Maimonides, quotes all sorts of people. Okay, he quotes Aristotle, he quotes Greek philosophers. In his medical writings, the Rambam quotes Galen, he quotes Hippocrates, you know, the Hippocratic Oath. Galen and Hippocrates were seen as the greatest, even a few centuries ago, the greatest medical minds of all time. And Hippocrates apparently was an atheist. And yet Maimonides has a whole book on medical writings where he says, Hippocrates said this aphorism, he said this statement. Maimonides, I say this. Hippocrates says this, I say that. And they'll say, like, Hippocrates says that if you get in this situation, you're not feeling well, you should do the following. Maimonides may disagree. He may say, I say you should do the following. So, you know, he had a conversation with one of the great minds from the times of the Greeks. And so you see from this that Maimonides is willing to quote from people, even if they're not believers necessarily, and to use them as a source of truth. Again, we said accept the truth from wherever it comes. Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his books, it's not so well read, it's very difficult, The Halachic Mind. Anyone wants to see how Rav Soloveitchik read non-Jewish sources, because there are people who want to create Rav Soloveitchik as someone who, well, he read non-Jewish sources only on the side, only to kind of learn about it, to convey to the people of his time that he understood, you know, their sources of truth and knowledge. If you read through just the index alone of this book, The Halachic Mind, I'm just going to read for you who he quotes here. Just the non-Jewish sources. Thomas Aquinas, Aristotle, Auerbach, Augustine, Averroes, Barth, Berkeley, Bloor. I mean, he just goes on and on, I'm just at the B, so you could go on forever here. You can't believe that he ever had time to be one of the greatest Torah sages of all time, reading all these works that he read. It's just incredible. But it's for sure that he also looked to truth in other sources that were not Jewish sources. You see this. You see this, that this is the case, that this is what he believes. And again, we said that one can do that. One is allowed to do it. Our case here was the problem of learning from someone who did something wrong and quoting in his name. We didn't say you shouldn't learn from him. You should still learn from him. But don't say it in his name anymore. Don't identify him as someone who is worthy to learn from. And that's just, don't forget, because he ate bread from a non-Jewish source, which he shouldn't have done, he said. He shouldn't have done. Now, it's interesting. There's a book called The Sefer HaChassidim. This is in Siman Taf Taf Kuf Lamed Chet. There, this source, this medieval source says, Mi Shamar Davar Ta'am Mina Torah. Someone who said a reason about something and understanding something in the Torah. Okay, very nice explanation to something in the Torah. Behemir la'akum. And then he became an idolater. And then he gave up Judaism. Ein omrim oto bishmo. You should no longer say that thing in his name. In fact, in the Sefer, Sharim Mitzvim Bahalacha, on Masechet Avodah Zarah, commenting upon this Gemara, it brings down as well that Tosafot in Masechet Sota, Daf Yud Bet, says that any shmuot, any traditions that learned by Rabbi Meir from Elisha ben Abuye, who is Rabbi, who later of course became a heretic, Kavu'um b'shem v'acherim omrim. He would say, instead of saying in his name, he would say, and others say, although in this case he was hinting acherim, is because this individual, Elisha ben Abuye, later became known as Acher, because he became like another person. So it says, B'shem Acherim, whenever it says the name of others, it refers to Elisha ben Abuye again, but his name was not to be cited along with the teachings that he conveyed. It would explain to me, by the way, something that I always wondered about concerning Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik often quotes, as we said, different people. And he always gives them their due. He doesn't try to say, this was my idea. And yet I've noticed there are two people he does not quote. And commentators have noted this, at least in one case. For example, Martin Buber was a famous Jewish thinker. He developed an idea called I-Thou. He had the idea you relate to a person as a thou, I-Thou. You relate to an object as a thing. Right? Fine. But, he said, you can also relate to a person as a thing. You can make an it out of a person. And to a degree, you can make a thou out of a thing. You know, your talus, you know, your tefillin, they could be like a thou to you. You know, this is very valuable to me. I have a relationship with my siddur, with my prayer book, with my Torah book, my Rambam that I learned from. You can have almost, you know, like a very intimate relation with that, while a person who should be I thou, it could be I it. It could be this person, I have nothing to say, I don't like him, I really don't pay any attention to him, I have nothing to do with him. Now, Buber said some beautiful things about this. He said, listen, you can't have an I thou relationship with every person, it's impossible. You can't have this open, intimate, full, it's impossible. Hopefully a husband and wife will have it. Hopefully, you know, you and your best friend will have it. Hopefully you and your children will have it. Or your parents will have it. You can't expect it's going to be with every person. That's impossible. Okay? But with God also, it should be I thou, capital T, he said. I vow that when you relate to God, it should be a full experience of, you know, of taking in God and God taking in what you have to say. Okay, so Buber said this beautiful idea. Fine. Rav Soloveitchik, in his book, The Lonely Man of Faith, discusses at a certain point, he says, the creating of a community. He says, I thou, I he, referring to God. He's using all these terms. I say, like, he doesn't quote Buber anywhere. And other people know this also. Like, he's very silent about Buber. Why doesn't he throw in Buber here? It seems like this is Buber's terminology. He doesn't quote it. Also, another example, Abraham Joshua Heschel. Some of you have heard the name, famous Jewish philosopher. But also Heschel, in some of his thoughts, says that he has no problem with saying that the Bible was written by human beings and so on. And so he also became, in some perspectives, problematic due to some of his writings, heretical to some people. So Soloveitchik also, I notice, he will discuss the idea of Kedushat HaZman, that Judaism is very unique in the sanctity that it gives to time. Not just giving sanctity to things, but giving sanctity to time, like Shabbat. The idea that Shabbat is just a separate day of time, and it's holy. Heschel, in his book, The Sabbath, has the most beautiful idea. He says that Judaism introduced this to the world. The idolaters always believed that holiness all only resided in things. A holy river, a holy mountain, a holy object, a holy temple. Only in things. That's what idolatry is. The holiness is in the thing. Judaism said, no, no, there's holiness in time. You have a day. What do you mean a day? How can it be holiness just in a day? Where? Where is it? It's not just from this time to that time. Where's the holiness? But that's what Judaism did. It introduced this concept to the world. And Heschel points out beautifully that the first thing ever called holy in the Torah is Shabbat, is Shabbos. Vayivarech Elohim et yom ha'shvi'i v'kadesh oto. God blessed the seventh day, and he called it holy. Vayikadesh oto. Heschel said this was a revolution that Judaism introduced to the world, the idea of holiness in time, not just in things. So Soloveitchik discusses in his own writings the idea of the sanctity of time. He doesn't quote Heschel. He doesn't say exactly the same thing, but you know, he says something's very close. He doesn't quote Heschel. In fact, I would use this idea under the chuppah. I have my own insight that sometimes I use at a wedding, where I will tell the chasm and kala, the bride and the groom, I will say to them, explaining this idea, okay, that Judaism introduced the idea of the sanctity of time. I say, building on Heschel, without mentioning Heschel, that Shabbos is the first thing called holy in the Torah. The first mitzvah given to the Jewish people is what? Rosh Chodesh, the calendar of all things. Why should the calendar be the first mitzvah? Make it the idea of one God, no idols. Why the calendar? That's the first mitzvah, the first commandment? And my explanation is because God wanted to say, my relationship with you, the Jewish people, which is done through mitzvah, through commandments, is going to be founded upon the time we give to each other. Holy days, holy moments, not the things we give to each other. And then I tell the bride and groom that your love is supposed to be modeled after the love of God and the Jewish people. And the love relationship you have with your partner will always be judged most by the time you give to each other. It's true, things have their place in a relationship. In Judaism also we have things. We have tefillin, we have tzitzis, we have things. And in a relationship also, there are gifts you give to each other. Of course you have to give things to each other. That's a sign of the love people have for each other. But it will never replace the time you give to each other. If someone says, you know, honey, can you spend some time? I don't have time. If you read the newspaper and you don't pay attention to your spouse, okay, while that person is asking for your attention, or your child, or anyone else, that relationship is not going to be a good relationship. The time you give to each other is the most sacred aspect of your relationship. So I'll use this under the chuppah at a wedding. So my wife will say to me, Mr., why did you quote Heschel? Sometimes I'll say, well, Soloveitchik indicates the importance of the sanctity of time. She'll say, you know that Heschel indicated that. Why did you quote Heschel? And I'd say, I didn't quote Heschel because I feel because some of his writings are problematic, so I don't quote Heschel. But I never really had a strong source for it until this lecture. Because in this lecture, as we just saw in the Sefer Hasidim, he says someone who goes away from Judaism, okay, as I believe Buber and Heschel did to some degree, he says, you can still say the things they said. We should accept the truth from wherever it comes. But you no longer say it in their name. In their names. You can just say it. You don't have to say it in their name. And it, I feel a little guilty about it because I never do that. I don't plagiarize. Whatever, if I get an idea from someone else, just the opposite. I give them the credit and I praise them. I thank you very much for giving me this idea. You know, I have my own unique ideas, but I don't have to steal someone else's. But in this case, I'm told not to say their names because people may turn to them as a source for truth in Judaism, which they do not always convey properly. So, again, an interesting view concerning this. The same view is also brought down in the Sefer Hasidim, this time Taf Kuf Ayin Zayin, where there it says, Adam Sheshomea Tam Tov, someone who hears a good reason that explains something in the Torah, O Kushia Tova, or a good difficulty even, a good kasha, a good difficulty on something in the Talmud, O Teirutz Tov, or a good answer, Mimin O Mimumar, from someone who's a heretic or someone who violates the Torah, or me'adam shemachti al aravim, or someone who has led others to sin, al yomar davar mishmo. You should no longer say that thing in his name. You should say it, but don't say it in his name, because it's going to corrupt people. By the way, just to show how far it goes, it seems you can quote people, though. I got a source from Shmuel Plotzker, see I'm saying in his name, Shmuel Plotzker, a congregant of mine, gave me the following source. I never saw this before. He gave me a source that's from Rav Yosef Ibn Iknin, who was a student of the Rambam, a student of Maimonides. And in his commentary on Shira Shirim, 493 to 495, he says the following. We're going to read it to you in English. He says, in his book HaMa'aseif, Rabbeinu Hai Gaon of Blessed Memory, this is one of the great thinkers in Judaism early on and after the Talmud, Rav Hai Gaon used the works of the Arabs in order to explain certain things. He also used a stanza from a certain love song to clarify saying of our rabbis. He also quotes the Quran and the Hadith, which is their kind of oral tradition, in order to, you know, to make certain points. And so did Rav Sadia Gaon of Blessed Memory before him. And for this reason, the sages said, whoever says a word of wisdom, even among the nations of the world, is called a sage. We indicated. You're supposed to accept the truth wherever it comes. You're supposed to recognize that there is wisdom among the nations. We said that. And in this connection, the Nagi, he quotes another individual, who was a Talmud Chacham, a great Torah scholar. He says, the Nagging, after citing many Christian explanations to a verse, says that Rav Hai Gaon instructed Rav Matzliach ben Albasek, the Dayan, the judge of Sicily, to go to the head of the Christian church, the Nestorian patriarch, to ask him what he knew regarding the interpretation of a certain biblical verse that would help him understand it better, but he was in doubt about the true meaning. When he saw that Rabbi Matzliach was reluctant to go, he rebuked him. And he said, our ancestors and pious predecessors would ask the adherents of other faiths, even shepherds, as is known, for guidance on the meaning or explanation of a word. It doesn't contradict anything. He's saying you can even go to a Christian scholar if he's an expert in the field and ask him what this word means. He only said you shouldn't say it in the name of a person who did what? Interestingly, who was Jewish and went away from it. Maybe here, there's no problem. So this is saying, look, a guy was raised Christian, a guy was raised a Muslim. He wasn't expected to be Jewish. So now if he says something, so we understand he was raised in that religion, and this is what Aquinas said, or this is what the Pope said. He gave this explanation. It's a good explanation. Maybe he can even say it in his name. Rethinking it, maybe he can even say it in his name. Is there anyone else who you cannot say an item in their name, or is there anyone else who you should not even turn towards in order to get truth from. We have said so far you can get truth, it seems, from anyone. Even from this one who was eating the bread, who was sinning. Even from a Christian scholar, you can get truth from him. The only question he has, you can say it in that person's name. But is there a limitation at all in regard to certain individuals? So now we turn to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. In a famous lecture that I have on tape, it's really fascinating to hear him speak. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, not the Rav Soloveitchik I quoted before and I usually quote, Rav Yosheber Soloveitchik, but Rav Aaron Soloveitchik once gave a lecture exactly upon this in Yeshiva University. It's now been put into a book called Logic of the Heart and Logic of the Mind. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik in there discussing the valuable aspect of all fields of knowledge and how Yeshiva University and those who follow in its footsteps should be proud of their willingness to study all areas of knowledge aside from the Torah, and that all of it can be integrated into knowing the world. He, however, says the following. Despite all the positive thoughts that we have discussed on the topic of pursuing knowledge around the axis of Torah, one qualification must be made. A professor who taught Bible in a college, this is in Europe, once came to my father of blessed memory, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, to ask whether the opinions of biblical critics with their personal refutations of the Bible. You know, biblical critics will say, you know, the Torah is not true. The stories in there, they borrowed from other religions. And it's really written by human beings. And there are mistakes and errors in the Torah. And the Torah doesn't know what it's talking about. And it's a flawed document. So this person asked Rav Soloveitchik's father, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's father, and Rav Yosheber Soloveitchik's father, Rav Moshe, he said, if I teach Bible at the university, can I teach these views of the biblical critics if I refute them? If I say, you know, Wellhausen, who was a well-known biblical critic, says that really the Bible is not accurate in what it's saying here, it doesn't know what it's talking about, and then if I, after saying that, if I refute Wellhausen, or if I point out, you know, Wellhausen has a very interesting idea over here that is really valuable, even though most of the Torah he sees as something wrong and incorrect, and maybe he doesn't give it much value. But over here, Wellhausen has a very good point. Could you do that? This was asked to the father of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Very last Mishnah in Masechet Sanhedrin says this. It's a famous Mishnah. It says, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek lamaba. Every Jew has a place in the world to come. We've discussed this before. Every Jew has a place in the world to come. And by the way, we know that non-Jews also. Chasidei mot olam, good people of all sorts, even non-Jews. Even non-Jews have a place in eternity in the place of the world to come. And then it goes on to say certain people, however, who don't have a place in the world to come. Who are they, it says? The following individuals. Someone says, there's no such thing as the resurrection of the dead, according to the Torah. There's no such thing. If you say that, that's heresy. You don't have a place in the world to come. The Rambam says that by saying this, you are not a Jew in the spiritual sense. In other words, imagine a Catholic says, I'm a good Catholic. Do you believe that Jesus is God and the Son of God? No, that I don't believe. I go to church every week. I celebrate Christmas. I celebrate Easter. I believe it's a very, very meaningful religion, the emphasis on love. But Jesus is God? Absolutely not. Now, would you say, you're a good Catholic? Of course not. How can you be a good Catholic? You're rejecting the basic fundamental of the religion. So too, Judaism, even though you're a Jew, if you reject the fundamentals, you do not have a place in the world to come because you are spiritually lacking as a Jew. Or if you say the Torah is not from heaven, the Torah is not divine, the Torah is a human document, okay? Or the apikoros, the heretic, someone who says, literally heretic means someone who doesn't believe God runs the world. There's no one running the world. The world's just hefker. The world just kind of runs on its own. There's no one in control. All right? All these people do not have a place in the world to come. Then, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, Afa kore b'svarim achitzoni. Also, a person who reads literally in the external books. In the external books. What does that mean, the external books? Now, some might think it means the Greek books, like the books of the Greeks. Some say it means maybe, it means like the book of the Apocrypha, the books that did not make it into the Bible. Okay, we have some books that did not make it into the Bible. Maybe it's those books. But Rav Soloveitchik's father said, look at the Rif, one of the Rishonim. He says, in regards to explaining this, he says, Bisvarim Shapirshu Atara Nevim Viketuvim Al Pi Da'atam Velo Samku Al Midrash Chachamim. He says, this refers, these external books, to people who write commentaries on the Bible itself. So I'm not talking about secular books. So I'm not talking about Greek books. So I'm not talking about idolatrous books. I'm talking about people who write commentaries on the Bible, but their commentaries are against the way the rabbis explain, the oral tradition explains it. In other words, if the rabbis say that this verse means as follows, and someone writes a book and says, you know, the rabbis say this, that's ridiculous. Okay? It's not true. Here's my explanation, and it's far better than what the rabbis say. You do not have a place in the world to come. Someone who writes books like that, someone whose goal is to undermine the sanctity of the Torah and the sanctity of our traditional understanding of that Torah. So therefore, for example, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, if this someone would come into my father or to me and say, am I allowed to study the works of Freud on psychiatry? Now wait a minute. You might say, well, Freud was a heretic. He didn't believe in God. He wasn't a religious Jew. That's okay. He would say, you can still study what he wrote on psychiatry. It's okay. Accept the truth from wherever it comes. If you think it's true, you can accept what he said. There's no problem there. No problem. All right? You know a certain doctor. Okay, Einstein. Okay, so Einstein was not an observant Jew. I don't know if he believed the Torah was divine. He believed in God to a certain degree, maybe. But he was not what we call, you know, the most committed Jew. But if he said something in physics, you have to say, well, he didn't believe in traditional Jewish beliefs, so therefore, that's ridiculous for Soloveitchik. Of course, what do you mean? You have to accept the truth from wherever it comes. Why would you accept the truth in that case? However, if it's someone who's trying to undermine the Torah, someone whose whole goal is to show the Torah is not true, like the biblical critics did, say the Bible's not true, it doesn't know what it's talking about, it just borrowed stuff from other religions, it's copying things, it's got errors in it, it's wrong, it's flawed. That already, anyone who says something, even the Rif has the reading. Afilu, some have the reading, Hadvarim Tovim, even the good things that such a person says. Not like Freud. Freud might have said some things, okay, you know, that don't really square up with Judaism very well. He did in a book called Moses and Monotheism. But there's some other things he said that are very good. I mean, the good things you should take from Freud. But not if someone's job is, I'm a biblical critic, and here we'll just wipe up the Torah and prove to you that it's not holy, and it's just nonsense, and it really shouldn't be given the sacredness that it's given, and shouldn't give the respect it's given throughout history. But over here, this guy says something very nice in explaining this verse. You don't even quote the good things and the nice things he says. Because he admits his whole goal is to undermine the Torah. And therefore, he wants you to read things so you'll be convinced to undermine the Torah. So even the so-called good things that he says, his goal might be to undermine your understanding of the Torah. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik therefore says, truth, yes. From anyone, you can accept the truth. And we said the only limitation is you don't quote it in their name. However, he says there's one exception. Biblical critics and critics of Chazal, he says that those individuals must be ignored entirely. You shouldn't even look for truth in their writings. I don't know if others disagree, but Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, quoting his father, said that you shouldn't even quote them at all and look to their writings. Again, maybe that's why Rav Soloveitchik himself, or Yosha Ber, doesn't quote Buber, doesn't quote Heschel. Like, don't say it in their name, and I don't know where he got the ideas from, he heard them, but maybe he held those individuals, you don't quote. They are there to undermine the Kedusha of the Torah. For example, Martin Buber says he believes in the great ideas of the Hasidim. He believes in Hasidic stories. He writes all about the Hasidim. You know why? Because he believes the Hasidim the early Hasidim especially, reflected the Bible better than anyone else, because he believes the Bible is spontaneous. People did things, they came up things to pray to God, it was spontaneous. Buber says the rabbis came and they froze the Bible. They made the Bible, which is something full of feeling and love and desire for God, into laws. You take this thing, you do this law, and you follow this, you follow that. And goodbye spontaneity, and goodbye genuineness, and goodbye authenticity. Ah, the Hasidim, they were authentic. If a Hasid woke up in the time of the Baal Shem Tov and said, you know, it's time to daven, but I don't feel it yet, Ribbono Shel'olam. I don't feel I can daven to you yet. I'm not ready yet. So I'm going to go and prepare for a little while first before I daven to you, right? The Mishnagdim, the legal experts of Judaism would say, no, what do you mean? It's time to daven. Hey, got daven right now. Got daven. The Hasidim would say, what do you mean? How could you daven if you're not ready, if you're not feeling it yet? If you're not feeling it yet, if you don't have the kavana yet? So even though the Hasidim were wrong according to the law, but Buber said, no, but you see, they're authentic. They know when you've got your daven, you've got to daven with all commitment to Hashem, not just, oh, I woke up late, oh, if I don't daven by 9:30, it gives me 2 minutes, oh, I better hurry and daven. What kind of daven is that? Buber said, that's ridiculous. He said, that's what the Chachamim, Chazal did. So they were, Buber was against the sages. He says so. He says they like froze the whole idea of being authentic in Judaism. He froze it. The Hasidim brought it back. Okay? So consequently, that's why people are against Buber. Because we're asked, so when you go to rabbinical school, so how do you know about these things? How do you know Buber, Heschel, and where do you learn? How do you know? So the Talmud says, or the critics, the biblical critics, right, Jesus, the New Testament, but how do you know these things? Because the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, Da malachashi lapikoris, that you have to know how to respond to the heretic. And how can you know, some of the commentators say, to respond to the heretic if you don't know what the heretic says? So if someone comes up to you and says, Rabbi, I'm really bothered by this. I see in the New Testament Jesus said this, and it's very convincing to me. And I say, I really can't help you. I don't know what Jesus said. Okay, great. So this guy's going to go and follow this. Instead, you can't combat against what Jesus said, or against if someone else said something from one of the critics. Instead of saying, that's a very good point. In fact, I know that work that the critic wrote, and let me tell you the response that I've developed or others have developed. If you don't know how to answer it, more than that, you're going to look like an ignoramus. Someone's going to go, you know, I read this very good academic paper, and I come to the rabbi, and he says, that's heresy. Instead of trying to respond to it, and to give an answer that makes sense, and you could say, so that the person can say, oh yeah, the rabbi gave a good answer to that heretical point. Yeah, the rabbi made a good point. Okay, then you can go on living with it. If you just say, well, you know, don't look at that, it's heresy. Someone might say, like, okay, we're afraid of truth. We're afraid of knowledge. We're afraid of knowledge. We don't want to spread things. We're afraid of knowledge, like evolution. Some people say, like, don't look at evolution. It's not true. And it goes against the Torah. So just don't even look at it. It's heresy. Others say, well, I don't know, let's look at it, see if maybe you can fit it in. Well, Cook and others said, evolution, it's not so bad, you can fit it in if you have to. If it's not true, fine, but if it is true, if we really find out it's true, then let's find a way to fit it into our tradition without violating the text of the Torah. We can see the Torah as being more metaphoric in nature, but it does go in an evolutionary fashion. It starts with more simple beings, ends up with man. There is a notion of knowing what to answer to the apikoros, and especially a rabbi has to know that kind of stuff. Someone might say, every regular Jew shouldn't just go around and read the New Testament and go around and read heretical stuff. They'll become a heretic. What are you trying to do? But at least a rabbi, at least that person should study such things so he is capable of intelligently giving an answer to those who have difficulties that have been created by reading this material. Just in concluding, the idea would be, as we're saying, that we've gone for the idea of a sinner who ate bread, he shouldn't have, okay, you don't say things in his name, that's one thing. But you still accept truth from such a person, you accept truth from anyone, except Rav Aharon Soloveitchik said, in the name of his father, someone who's out to really undermine the Torah. Now, of course, I may have contradicted myself a little in this very sheer, because I quoted Heschel and his truth, and I quoted Buber and the truth. You could say I was just doing this part of a lesson to teach you. Or, again, maybe there are those who say otherwise. I don't know. But this is one very important perspective in trying to understand this notion of learning from heretics and learning from sinners.